Hello, hello, and welcome back to Art House Garage, the snob-free film podcast where we make art house, indie, classic, and foreign cinema accessible to the masses. I'm your host, Andrew Sweatman, and today on the show, we've got a review of the new film from director George Miller called 3,000 Years of Longing. Filmmaker Clayton Henderson returns to the show to break down the film. Stick around. Before we get into the show, don't forget Art House Garage has a Patreon. Sign up today for extended episodes, bonus episodes, video episodes, and ad-free episodes. All that, plus a discount on merch in the Art House Garage shop. Go to patreon.com/arthousegarage today or find a link in the show notes. Okay, back to the show. Welcome to Art House Garage. Before we get into today's discussion, a quick note, just a few new things happening around arthousegarage.com. Really just one, a new review out on the blog that you can check out for a film called The Good Boss. The film stars Javier Bardem as the boss of a factory that produces industrial scales. That may not sound very exciting, but it's actually a really clever, biting satire, sort of a dark comedy about working conditions. And what I say in my review is, it's surprisingly crowd-pleasing for a dark comedy. Also significant is the fact that this film, The Good Boss, or El Buen Patron, won the top film prize in Spain last year at the Goya Awards. It actually won a ton of Goya Awards for Best Director, Best Writer, Best Actor for Javier Bardem. Almost all of the other actors in the film are nominated for different awards. So it kind of swept the Goyas last year in 2021, and it's just now getting its US release this weekend. I won't go too in-depth, but basically Javier Bardem is so good in this. He's good in everything, but this is a particularly great performance from him as this very charming, likable, kind of toxic positivity kind of a character who he's almost like Don Corleone from The Godfather, where he, you know, is very involved in the people's lives that work for him, and he's trying to fix their problems. And on the surface, he's this very good boss, right? Very charming and likable. But he's also at the same time so repulsive. And what I say in my review is that it's really quite a balancing act between being so likable and so unlikable at the same time. And Javier Bardem pulls it off, and it's just so fun to watch. It's a very funny movie. It is very chilling at times with how dark it gets. So highly recommend The Good Boss. Check out the review at arthousegarage.com, and that is now playing in limited release, including here in Little Rock. It's playing for at least a week or two at the Riverdale. On today's episode, we are talking about 3,000 Years of Longing, the new film from director George Miller. It's a very interesting film, kind of an unusual premise. Basically, Tilda Swinton plays an academic who is traveling for work, and she purchases a decorative bottle. In her hotel room, she opens this bottle, and out comes a genie, or a djinn, played by Idris Elba. And most of the movie is them talking in this hotel room, but we're seeing flashbacks to their different experiences, mostly seeing his stories because he's been alive for 3,000 years or more and has spent a lot of time trapped in this bottle interacting with people over the centuries. So it's kind of an adventure story. A lot of fun, honestly. I really like this. We'll get into the details in just a minute with Clayton Henderson, who is our guest today. He came on the show before to talk about Red Rocket and then to talk about The Batman earlier this year. He's back again. He's a big fan of George Miller. So without further ado, here is my discussion with Clayton Henderson about the film 3,000 Years of Longing.
My name is Alethea. My story is true. I am a solitary creature by nature. I have no children, no siblings, no parents. I did once have a husband. If there is fate, who can say? But in the Grand Bazaar of Istanbul, I chose a memento. I like it. Whatever it is, I'm sure it has an interesting story.
Ah! So what will you wish for?
What is your heart's desire?
I do have a question. What does one do with three wishes?
You'll see.
Clayton Henderson, thank you so much for coming back on the podcast today. How are you?
I'm good. It's good to be back.
Yeah. I've been following you on Facebook with different things. So first of all, you recently worked on a film set in Italy, right? How long were you there?
I was in Italy for 6 weeks as part of a little film program from the New York Film Academy.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so, I remember you posted about that way back. That was the same thing. Cool.
Yeah. So it was just 6 weeks of like basic film classes. Like they were just, this is how you write a script. This is how you use a camera. This is how you do this. This is how you do that. Stuff I already knew, but hey, it was cool to be in Italy. So.
Yeah. Always good
to have a maker.
Why not in Italy? Yeah. What were you saying, sir?
And I got to make a movie in Italy. So that was all, that was fun.
That's amazing. So was the making the movie was part of the program you were doing?
Yeah. We all had to make our own short film every weekend.
Oh, wow.
And the one that I just did, the last one I did, I'm still working on it here because I want to send it out to a few places.
Nice.
Maybe early next year I'll start submitting it to places.
That is super cool. Yeah, I've been seeing, I just saw all your photos and everything. Like, oh, what's he doing in Italy? And then I realized it was a film thing. I was like, that's so cool. And
yeah, it was fun.
Definitely some travel jealousy. I've been to Italy once, along a few, 10 years ago now?
Yeah.
And, I'd love to.
Where at?
It was like one of those things where we could spend a week in each of these cities, but we did like a city a day, which is like not enough time. But we went to Rome and Florence and.
That's where I was.
Okay. I thought that was Florence. That's right. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. One other city. One other.
We went to Pisa for a day. That was fun.
Yeah. Pisa is like right outside of Rome, as I recall, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's about a 2 hour. It's about, no, not 2 hour, about an hour train ride.
Like train, yeah.
Yeah.
So we did Pisa when I was there too. And then we went to one other city besides Florence, and I am blanking on where it was. So yeah. 10 years ago, I just turned 32, so I'm feeling old and forgetting everything now.
I just turned 20.
In 10 years, you'll forget all about this. That's depressing. No, you'll remember. Well, let's talk about your other film, because I recently saw, so you did it as part of the Louisiana Film Prize.
Mm-hmm.
It's called The Blue Dress, correct?
Yeah, and there's a really funny story with
that. What's the deal there?
So they do like an announcement party. They only pick 20 films to be played in October. Hmm. So, and they had like 140 something submissions this year. So it was pretty competitive in that room. And so let's see, what day was it? Friday, they make the announcement. I'm there at the party with other people that I've worked with on their films, and they announced each one. I didn't get in. Mm-hmm. It didn't get announced. So I'm like, okay, that sucks. But hey, at least I still got other places to submit it.
Mm-hmm.
Sunday, I get home from, I think I was just getting food. So I come home. I'm about to eat. I get a phone call. It's one of the directors from Film Prize. And they said that a film had to be dropped out for whatever reasons, and mine was the next one to take its place.
Nice. So you were like number 21 on the list.
We kept joking that I was number 21, but and it turns out I really was.
That's great. Wow.
Yeah. So that was tense, but it was fun to get that phone call.
Has that festival already happened where it played, or is that coming up?
It's in October.
In October.
October 20th through the 22nd. Yeah.
Wow. Well, congrats. That's really exciting. And
I've only been there once a few years ago because I worked on, I PA'd two shorts that got in. So we decided to go check it out, and it was a lot of fun. So
that's
it'll be nice. It'll be different going there this year as a with a film.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah.
Well, so will you put that film, submit it to any other festivals?
We're going to submit it to Filmland again. And
I'm wearing my Filmland
T-shirt. Yeah, I see that. Yeah. You know, I really liked the Rogers Short Film Festival. Oh, yeah. So I
heard that one on the show before. That's right.
Yeah, that one was a lot of fun. So I want to submit it there. A bunch of festivals. Like, I mean, it's a long shot, but hey, why not just shoot the bullet and submit it to like Sundance just for
there you go.
Bits and giggles.
You never know.
Yeah.
It'd change your life overnight. Why it's worth the shot. Yeah. Well, I'm excited to hopefully see it at, you know, one of these festivals around here before too long. So it's definitely on my watch list for the next few months. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I'm so excited to have you back on the show because, I was like, I wasn't sure what I was going to do for this week's show, but I knew that George Miller had this new film out and I was like, that looks interesting. I'd like to check it out. And then you reached out and said, hey, do you have anyone for this movie? And I was like, let's do it. Because you told me you're a big fan of George Miller. All right, before we get into 3,000 Years of Longing, I thought I'd just ask, is there anything else you've been watching recently that you want to put on our radar?
I watched Vengeance today, the BJ Novak.
Yeah.
Western.
Yeah, sort of neo-noir Western sort of thing. Western. It's kind of
weird. It was fun. Didn't love it, didn't hate it. It was fun. Yeah. It's a Sunday afternoon movie.
That's a good call.
Like, my mom would love it.
That's
kind of how I would say it. So that was fun.
Yeah, I watched that a couple weeks ago and I actually talked really briefly about it on the podcast with Omaya. But yeah, my experience with that movie was like, there's a few things in there that are really good. Like I feel like it had moments of greatness, but then
Ashton
Kutcher was so good. Yeah.
He was fantastic.
Like, I haven't seen him do much like that. You know, I'm used to that 70s show, you know?
Yeah. And I like a lot. Great. I like some of the monologue bits. Mm-hmm. Felt very Linklater-esque.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Psychology, philosophy type stuff.
The stuff I talked about with Omaya on a recent episode was about it. Kind of tied in with auteur theory, but it the stuff that he talks about with music actually, where you know art used to be in control of us, and we would just go buy an album, you didn't know what's going to be on it, and now. You know, where it's like the dating apps of art and we just pick and choose and we don't even know what artists are playing on our playlist. We just, you know, he says they scream our own voices back at us. Just like, this is stuff that I like and I'm just going to play. So that was a really cool kind of criticism and trying to get back to, you know, and auteurs like, you know, a creative force making movies. And that's what BJ Novak, I think, is trying to do. And it was definitely, I came away thinking, okay, he's going to tighten this up. And next time I think his movie, I'm excited to see what he does next.
Oh yeah. I'm very excited.
But yeah,
because he was great. I also saw, on Amazon, I rented it. I Love My Dad with Patton Oswalt, and that is one of the best dark comedies I've seen in a good while. Nice. It is so screwed up, and allegedly a true story, which makes it even more screwed up. But I don't want to say what it's about if no one's seen it, but
I think I've heard the premise, but we can hold it. I didn't know it was on DVD.
I highly recommend it. It's not a family movie. That. Don't watch it with your dad, but
not a Father's Day.
Not a father-son movie. And,
I did not realize it was rentable yet. So that's good to know. I can check
and
it out.
Yesterday, my theater downtown had a little Batman marathon. So
I want to ask about that. That's right.
That was fun. I saw the first two Tim Burton ones, which was a lot of fun in theaters. Like that was really fun. I saw Mask of the Phantasm, which I never saw that one. I love the animated series. So I was looking forward to finally seeing that one.
Yeah.
It was cute. I liked it a lot.
I remember loving that one. I rented it on VHS when I was a kid and I was like, this is cool. But I haven't seen it since then.
It was a lot of fun. We didn't stay around for Batman Forever, obviously. I like Batman Forever, but I wasn't dying to see that one in theaters.
Yeah, that's a long day in the theater to do all four.
Yeah, and then the last movie was The Dark Knight.
Okay.
Which was like, oh, you're not going to play Batman and Robin? Come on now. That's the best one.
Yeah, well, that's cool. That's a fun day at the movies.
Yeah, that was
Batman cool. stuff. And you know, you first came, I think, for Red Rocket on this podcast, and then was Batman.
Then we did the Batman.
All the Batman tie-ins with you.
Oh yeah.
Oh, cool. Well, I was actually just going to glance at my letterbox and see what I watched recently that I could talk about. I think I've talked about everything on the podcast. Oh my gosh. I can talk about Fire of Love. That one is a documentary that Neon put it out, and I heard really good things about it, and then it played for like a week or two in Little Rock, and I really liked it. So a documentary about two volcanologists. Like, these are people who study volcanoes. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's kind of like that documentary Free Solo, where it's like a really incredible footage of this something really dangerous, and you're just like on the edge of your seat because like
yeah.
I feel like they could die at any second. It's that kind of stuff. They're like really close to volcanoes and lava. I learned a lot about volcanoes and kind of the significance, and like what they ended up trying to do is build in safety protocols to help, they would reach out to the government and say, this is going to happen and you need to have some evacuation measures in place or a lot of people are going to die. And by the end of the movie, you see like they were able to make a difference. But there's also some tragic ones where we told them and they didn't listen and then it happened, you know? So that stuff is really interesting, but it's also like the two people, they're kind of like, they have this kind of rock star energy in the geology world.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember when they got started. It's been a few weeks since I watched it. They lived until the early 90s. And this film covers their whole life. The film is narrated by Miranda July, who I really like her films, and she has a great kind of narrator voice for this kind of a story. But especially the husband in this couple, he was kind of into cinema. And so like they documented everything they did, got this incredible footage, and even like made some sort of little film, like for fun kind of films as they're doing it too. So you see a lot of that stuff. There's a lot of interesting thematic stuff in different directions about like they were learning to have like a public persona on camera versus their real life. And it kind of explores that and what their marriage was like and how they saw the world a little differently and brought that into their work. Really, really interesting stuff. Highly recommend. It's called Fire of Love.
Fire of Love.
And it's got a lot of music by the band Air, the French electronic band, who they've done some other cinema things before too. And it fits. It really has this like kind of out there sci-fi feeling, even though it's this true story.
I've seen this poster. Seen the poster.
Highly recommend Fire of Love. I want to check it out again, but like it's like top 10 material of the year. Like, I really, really liked it a lot.
There's a lot of great ones this year. I can see a lot of films from this year becoming someone's favorite movie. Yeah. Like if someone told me Nope was their favorite movie, I would be 100% okay with that. I really like Nope. That was fun. I saw Elvis in Italy. That was fun.
Oh, that's cool. I have not caught up with Elvis yet.
Elvis might be my favorite from this year. I love Baz. Nice. So
all right, there you go.
I may be maybe a little biased on that one, but I love Baz and what he does. Really liked it. I liked The Black Phone.
I really like The Black Phone as well.
Phone, yeah. And I finally watched Crimes of the Future.
It's an intense one.
Yeah. If that's Cronenberg's last film, I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Because I really liked it a lot.
It feels like a culmination a little bit, which is mostly, like I did a podcast about it, and I said at the top, like, I don't know that much about Cronenberg, but I had a couple of guests that did, and they said that this could be like a culmination final film kind of thing.
I'm still trying to catch up on a few of his, but
same. I've seen three or four, I think.
Don't watch Map of the Stars. That one's awful.
I think I saw recently you did like a double feature of like History of Violence and something else.
And I did a double watch of History of Violence and Eastern Promises in one night.
I haven't seen either of those, but I understand that that's probably an intense evening
for you. Oh yeah. Especially Eastern Promises. Mm-hmm. That movie's great. That may be my favorite from him.
Nice. All right. Well, let's talk about today's film, 3,000 Years of Longing. My first question is, I feel like I've seen a handful of George Miller things, but not everything he's done.
He doesn't have a lot.
Yeah, it's true. I was looking back over his filmography, and it's all kind of random, honestly.
Yeah.
What do you like about him as a filmmaker?
He just makes whatever he wants. Mm-hmm. He's like Sam Raimi or John Carpenter. You don't really know what his next one will be, because I mean, like, you know, he has Mad Max, then he has Babe, then he has Happy Feet, then he has like a drama with Lorenzo's Oil, and then, you know, here's the Fury Road, and
yeah.
So it's like, you never know what you're going to get with him, but it's like, even with his less high octane films, there's still a little, you can tell it's his. It's, he his style reminds me of like a lighter Sam Raimi, not as showy with the editing, but more with like his camera movements and cinematography.
Yeah.
I really like, especially in the Mad Max movies, how he speeds up the footage to make it look faster and gives it a really good chaotic energy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I like Happy Feet. That's not a movie I'd recommend for kids, but I think it's a lot smarter than what people think it is who haven't seen it.
Yeah, that's so funny. I always forget he did Happy Feet. I think it's like we've had it on as a family and I haven't really watched it. Like, I need to sit down and watch it.
It's very symbolic with what it is, which is very surprising. I'm like, huh, 5-year-old me did not pick up on that.
Yeah. It's funny. That's his highest grossing film. I was reading it as a headline of all his movies ever made. Happy.
Yeah. That's sad. It's so sad that Fury Road made nothing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it was like Pitch Perfect 2 beat it at the box office when it came out. And that's just so sad.
Yeah. And yet it kind of defined, like, I mean, it's like top of the decade for a lot of film critics and stuff. So,
oh yeah. I love Fury Road. I just rewatched it before 3,000 years. Yeah. Cause I've seen all of his except for, the one with Nick Nolte, the Lorenzo's Oil.
I haven't seen Lorenzo's Oil or Witches of Eastwick. I love Fury Road. I don't judge me here. I've actually never seen the original Mad Max. It's been on my list forever, and I need to catch up with all the Mad Max movies.
Oh, so you haven't seen the first three?
Correct, yeah.
Okay. I was about to say, if you haven't seen the first one, you may be a little disappointed, but...
Okay, interesting. Because
it's not like The Road Warrior or Fury Road. It's very... He had some money and he wanted to make this one movie and it is what it is. It's like, it's a lot like Evil Dead. Mm. No one really thinks of the first Evil Dead. Everyone thinks of the second one. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot like that for me.
That's interesting. That's cool. But then of course, loved Babe as a kid, which he wrote, but didn't direct the first Babe, but then he did direct the second Babe.
The second one,
which is such a weird movie.
That's one of the really biggest bombs in cinematic history, I think.
Yeah, I think that's right.
And it's like, it was really expensive too, I think, because of all the animals, and it just bombed big time.
it's kind of a hard left turn from the first Babe, but
anyway. It's cute. I mean, the first one's masterpiece, but
yeah, for sure. Well, let's talk about this film. So how does 3,000 Years of Longing fit into the George Miller filmography in your mind? I guess if he's such a all over the place, then it doesn't really have to have a spot. But I guess the question is, what do you think about this in comparison to his others, and how well did you like it?
It had a great trailer. I'll say that. The trailer was great. And I think the trailer also kind of misleads the type of energy that it has, because it's more slow than what he's typically known for. I liked it a lot. I don't love it. I definitely don't hate it. I think it's a well-made picture.
Yeah.
But it's probably near the bottom for me, but I'm still thinking about it. I definitely want to watch it again soon. If I have time this week, I may go see it again, because I saw it like 3 days ago and I'm still thinking about it.
Yeah, it definitely is one that I've continued to think about as well. And I haven't seen as many George Miller films as you, but so I've been talking about auteur theory on the podcast recently with Omaya Jones, as we do French New Wave stuff, and kind of like the auteur theory idea sort of came out of that period. And I think this film really fits into that spirit of, you know, we go to see it for the talent and the creative voice behind it, and maybe it's not their best movie, but it's still more interesting than maybe 99% of the stuff coming out of Hollywood. definitely how I felt about it.
I'd much rather see this Idris Elba movie than that Lion one that just came out.
We have like the Idris Elba double feature this weekend. Yeah. But then also I just saw Memoria that's playing in Little Rock. And so that was a Tilda Swinton double header for me.
Still need to see that one. It's not playing anywhere near here.
Yeah. It's here for the rest of the week, I think. I really did enjoy this ultimately. I thought it had some interesting ideas in it. And it's funny, I never saw the trailer for this. And maybe I liked it more because of that. Maybe it overpromised or something, like you're saying.
Yeah.
I remember when it came out, I saw some headlines about the new movie from George Miller looks wild and here's the premise. But I was like, I'll watch that trailer, and then I just never did.
The trailer has more of a Fury Road type energy to it. Mm-hmm. Like it feels like you haven't seen this filmmaker in a while, kind of like the Doctor Strange, the new Doctor Strange is like, oh, Sam Raimi hasn't made a movie in a while, so it's going to be very crazy.
That's what
the trailer kind of gives off, like, oh, George Miller hasn't made anything in a while, just here he is doing some weird shit, but
yeah, hold on tight. But then
it's a
pretty low-key movie.
But like It's had like no marketing. Like it made no money this weekend. It's kind of sad too, because I mean it is a really good movie, and I hope a lot of people go see it.
Yeah, as I was watching it, I was kind of like, okay, I can see why this is getting sort of mixed reviews, right? It doesn't surprise me, but it's also like just based on the talent alone, I thought this must, you know, with George Miller and Tilda Swinton and Idris Elba, this is gonna like sweep the, you know, award shows and things. But then it's not been that kind of movie. I don't think it has that kind of legs to it, but it,
costumes maybe.
But I really did enjoy it. Let's talk about the performers. So what did you think about Idris Elba and Tilda Swinton in this movie?
Tilda Swinton's great in everything. So of course she's great in this. I got a little hint of, not autism, but something's a little off with her.
Interesting. Just
then the way her performance was, I don't know, that may just be me, but no, she was great. Idris Elba, this is probably my favorite that I've seen from him.
Nice.
I haven't seen everything that he's been in, but I mean, I liked him in The Office, but no, I really liked him in this. It is very different from like the Pacific Rim type role that I guess he's kind of known for. I don't know. I don't know what he's really known for. And I know there's a BBC show, but I thought he was great in this.
I think in that he's kind of like, you know, hard-nosed detective, kind of Luther, I think is the type of. I haven't watched it, but I've seen like some clips of it. He's just kind of, I've always think of it kind of like Sherlock, but more like muscly, kind of like, I'm going to get the bad guys kind of feeling. Of course, I haven't watched it. But yeah, I actually thought about his role in The Office as I was watching this, because the quote from that is always, I'm aware of the effect I have on women, because all the women are responding. And in this movie, he meets Shiva.
It's a big
he's got that Idris Elba energy can get even Shiva. I really liked him too, both of them. And actually, I read it was an interview with George Miller, and he said he thinks, and this is just his opinion, but he feels like both of the roles are like somewhat similar to their actual personalities, which I thought was interesting to hear, because we've seen Tilda Swinton do so many different things.
Yeah.
And Idris Elba, of course, he's like, you know, a djinn in this and like has all these powers, but he at the same time is kind of down to earth in a way that I think really works for the script. And yeah, really their chemistry, because most of the movie is them alone in a room talking and like storytelling.
Yeah, it was.
That was kind of a cool thing too. And it's also based on a book or a short story, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I read that, George Miller, they read it in the 90s and it's like, oh, that's going to be a great movie one day. And finally got it made.
I think he wanted to make this like sometime after Happy Feet.
Yeah. Like way back, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I love Tilda Swinton in it too. She is, it's pretty low key performance from her, and like, down to earth. And it's like, I can see this being like her actual personality maybe. But yeah, I thought both of them were really strong, and so much of it is just like, in her facial expressions and her body language, which, you know, I just watched Memoria again last night too. And that's so much, it's such a low key performance as well. So it's kind of an interesting counterpoint. there's a lot more dialogue in this movie than there is in that one. But I thought both were really strong here. Did you have any favorite, you know, themes in the film or aspects of the filmmaking or anything that stuck out to you?
I like that it's a fairy tale about mm-hmm. stories.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, stories is definitely what the movie is about. Like, mm-hmm. it's literally someone telling another person his stories. Mm-hmm. And she wants to tell her stories. And so I thought that was kind of sweet. And I really liked the ending a lot, mm-hmm. Especially the ending shot. The ending shot is amazing.
Without spoiling it, is it there's like the camera goes up high as they're walking, or I'm forgetting?
I don't think the camera moves up. I think it's just locked down and they're walking away.
But it's in the park.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. 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 For some reason, I felt like the camera moved up. But yeah, I didn't think it was a strong ending too.
Yeah. It's like a Terry Gilliam type shot for some reason.
Interesting.
But I really like the ending. I think it has a lot of great ideas, but it feels very much like a first draft of a script for me. I wasn't big on the whole structure of the film. I kind of wish, because I mean, I always have like kind of issues with like the Forrest Gump type structure where someone's telling a story and we see it's not my favorite type of screenplay structure. I would have preferred to like see the Jin's story from the beginning leading up to where he meets Tilda Swinton. So like we could see like those 3,000 years.
Yeah.
And like kind of have like a little character study type. But I mean, what we got was fine. I like his stories the most. Those were the standout moments for me because I found him a little more interesting than Tilda Swinton's character.
But yeah, like both performances were great. If he did that structure, he would be the protagonist probably. That would be an interesting
But for a movie. I mean, but that's the only thing keeping me from loving it is just like how the story is told.
Yeah.
Ironically enough, that it's being about a story, that it's about stories.
Yeah, that's interesting because we open on her narration, and then it's kind of what leads up to her meeting him. Then they're in the room for 2/3 of the movie, at least.
I would say that's the initial setting of the movie. Yeah.
And then it finally does break out of that and we get some kind of what happens after that. More than I expected, actually. I thought it might be like they leave the hotel room and then it's over, but there's actually quite a bit more. So the structure, I don't think I had complaints with it, but it definitely kept me guessing. And I kind of liked that because it surprised me a little. It's like a little off kilter from what you expect. Mm-hmm. But I can also see why it might not work. But yeah, it's interesting too, because we even get like a little vignette, like title cards and a few of the sub stories that he's telling, which is that does feel a little incongruous somehow with everything.
It happened like
there's only like 3 or 4 of them, I think.
Yeah, and it started like 30 to 40 minutes into it as well. Like it started like the titles came in later than what you would expect. Like maybe it should have started like at the beginning, or I don't know. It was weird. Well,
yeah,
not really. I can see where it's like, okay, this story's starting. So here's the title. Mm-hmm. Here's the book opening. Here's the first chapter.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, that may see, this is why I want to watch it again.
Yeah. Maybe it will be better on a second time for you.
Yeah. I think it will. But
yeah, I like the storytelling stuff a lot too. And the, so it opens with her narration talking about how I'm going to tell this as a fairy tale because otherwise you might not believe it. I thought it was interesting. It made me think about the Guillermo del Toro film Shape of Water, where it opens up setting the stage. This is a fairy tale. But I like too that so at the beginning she's like an academic and she's giving this like TED Talk style like lecture with someone else, and the subject of their lecture is interesting. It's like the stuff that we now understand scientifically for centuries people thought was myth, and like they had to say, oh, we don't understand weather patterns, so a god must be doing this, or we don't understand microbial, you know, gut health, and so we don't know why we're getting sick, and so it must be the gods. And so kind of pointing forward to what things that we are still mystified by will we one day understand scientifically. I thought that was a cool thing to think about. But then it also like, okay, then she meets a magical creature who kind of breaks her. I think that's the point, is that it breaks her a little bit.
In the
Yeah.
And the TED Talk ends with like pictures of superheroes. In
yeah,
the
yeah, they were going to some interesting places.
Yeah.
Those are our gods that we.
Yeah. It was like the Justice League, I think, which is funny because he was supposed to make a Justice League movie.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Speaking of Idris Elba, too, I was thinking about, like the Pacific Rim role, or like, isn't he in one of the Fast and Furious? He's in that spinoff Fast and Furious movie.
Yeah. He's in the one with just The Rock and
that's right. Jason Statham. Yeah. Which is a funny, like, yeah, so maybe that's he has this like interesting like bigger budget stuff, but then more muted, smaller stuff too. Anyway,
this is the most muted I've seen him, and I think that's what I liked most about his performance.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Let me look at his IMDb really quick, live on the fly here, because I know there's other things that I've seen that are not, you know, huge budget things. Oh, he's in Beast of No Nation. I actually haven't seen that, but that's
That one's really good.
Let's see what else. Oh, yeah. Recently, he's in Sonic the Hedgehog 2. I forgot he's the voice of Knuckles. But that's fine, because I like his voice a lot.
He was in Cats.
He was in The Harder They Fall, that Western. Oh, and The Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
I get that as well. I guess he does have mostly bigger budget kind of stuff, if you look at
it. Yeah.
Compare. Maybe not as you get earlier in his career, but yeah. And then Thor, he's one of the Heimdall in the
film. Oh, yeah. He's the guy with the sword.
Yeah. Oh, he's in 28 Weeks Later, not 28 Days Later.
I haven't seen the sequel. I've seen the first one.
It's not that good.
No, the first one scared the hell out of me.
Yeah, I've seen the first one a bunch of times. I love it. But the second one is not that great. Well, anyway, we jumped back to Idris Elba talk. But, but yeah, so I did. I liked some of the thematic stuff going on. Yeah, and it kept me guessing enough. And it's a kind of a fun adventure kind of a story as you jump into all these things. Like we see some historical stuff that I haven't really seen depicted. Magical stuff going on. Like when so we see King Solomon coming to woo Sheba, and he has this instrument and he's playing, and there's like these creatures around. There's kind of this magical realism feeling to it. Which I didn't expect. And that stuff was really fun.
That's more the stuff I was expecting out of it, based off of George Miller's other stuff, especially after Fury Road, because you know, there's all the weird characters in that.
Yeah.
So I was expecting a little bit of that. There was a lot, especially in that other room.
I know you're talking about.
I was like, that was the most George Miller stuff there.
There's some interesting stuff that you're talking about, the brother character who
had
fetish.
That's
the aspect of the film.
Yeah
I thought that stuff was interesting and kind of fun as well. But
I mean, I like that it's a fairy tale, and I like how weird the movie is. You talk about movies like, you talk about something in a movie that you've never seen before. I don't think I've seen anything like this before. Everything Everywhere All at Once that came out this year. Never seen anything like that. So like, even if it's not like as a higher ranking for me, like Everything Everywhere was, I still appreciate and admire everything that it set out to do.
Yeah.
Even if it didn't emotionally connect with me as much as I wanted it to, I still appreciate and like a lot of like the visuals and directing and all that.
Yeah, it was like a fun time at the movies, I think. And a thought-provoking fun time at the movies.
Oh,
big action movie or something. But yeah, I thought it was interesting too. I just remember to think about, so anytime I think about like a story with a genie with three witches or wishes, I think about Aladdin, of course, our childhood. But so this, one of the stories in the midst of this had some interesting like mirrorings of the Aladdin story. So I wonder if they come from a common story, and how much this is like from, you know, an ancient story. But it's a woman though. I'm trying to remember the details. I went to see this actually on a whim because I didn't know if I was going to have time, and I went and I didn't have my notebook, so I didn't take notes. So I'm working from my brain. But there's one it's the one where she wants to be noticed by the king. So it's like, instead of Aladdin wanting to, you know, as a street rat wanting to be loved, be a prince, to be loved by the princess, it's like a reversal of that, where it's this woman who is a servant but wants to have the prince and bear his child and all of that. And so there's that aspect, because she wishes to have his attention. And then in that segment as well, there's a moment where she is thrown in the water. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember exactly how it plays out, but like that was a thing in Aladdin 2 where he almost drowns and then the genie has to save him. But yeah, so I wondered if there was some common storytelling.
Yeah, I was reading something. There was a lot of Arabian Night influence. I think the name of the plane that she's on at the beginning was named after something in Arabian Nights. I can't remember.
Yeah, she refers to it as a magic carpet
or something. There's a lot of like Arabian Night influences as well. So
yeah, and that's another thing that I really did like, that was just a few little touches of it, but it goes along with like what her lecture is about, understanding, you know, using stories to understand the world, and then we have science that can understand them too. And it doesn't have to be like science versus myth, like both can coexist. But like when she refers to the airplane as a magic carpet, as she's like setting up, this is a fairy tale. But then when Einstein is on the TV and he says, who's that? And she has to explain how a TV works. But then he says, who's that? And she says, he's a wizard who has helped guide us through time. I was like, that's kind of a cool thing.
I like all that. That was fun.
Cool touch. Well, you kind of already touched on some of this, but I was going to ask if there's anything that didn't work for you about this movie.
It's mainly just the structure for me. That was mainly it.
Yeah. I think there's a few thematic things that I wish had been. So like towards the end, when she goes back to her house and she has these neighbors who show up and are very kind of like, I don't know, they're kind of racist and they're kind of ethnocentric, and you can tell they have a very kind of closed-minded way of living their lives, and she's very frustrated by that. And that's kind of a cool thing. And I feel like the last third or last fourth of the movie even just kind of deals with that a little bit, but that wasn't really present for the rest of the film, unless maybe on a rewatch I would see it more. But that was like, oh, that's a cool thing, and I wish it had been fleshed out a little more or handled just a little differently. But
I would have liked to seen more of Tilda Swinton, Idris Elba, like after the hotel room, just like, like maybe we see them like live their life together for like a year or so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Instead of just like, it just, for me, it just felt like it was just kind of ready to wrap up.
Yeah.
That's what it felt like for me.
Yeah. I think that's what was surprising too. It's like, okay, it's about to end. Right. And then it just kind of keeps going, but it still feels like we're in conclusion mode.
Almost
the end. So maybe that structure, you're right, is a little different. Well, any final thoughts on 3,000 Years of Longing?
Like I said, it's has some great ideas, is well made, well shot, just didn't 100% connect with me as much as other George Miller films did. It connected with me a lot more than Happy Feet 2. I'll say that. It was much better than Happy Feet 2.
There you go. Well, yeah, I think I would encourage people to, you know, if there's not much that comes out new in August, September, that's kind of like the summertime is kind of over.
Yeah.
And so like, there's not a ton of great stuff at the theater right now. This is worth going to see on the big
screen. Oh, yeah, I would definitely say watch this over Beast, I guess. Yeah,
there you go. Beast. So there's, they pull out like, they're reshowing Lord of the Rings this month because like there's just no new movies right now. So that is 3,000 Years of Longing, now playing in theaters. So I'm sure it'll be around for a few more weeks. Encourage you to go check it out. And thanks so much for joining us today, Clayton. I appreciate it.
Always fun.
Huge thanks to Clayton Henderson. Always a pleasure talking with him. I can't wait for him to come back again. Stay tuned. Next time on the show, we will finish out our French New Wave series with Omaya Jones, looking at the film The Umbrellas of Cherbourg and talking about the director, Jacques Demy. And with that, thank you for listening to Arthouse Garage. We've got a few years worth of episodes. You can hear all of those in your podcast app of choice. Our theme music is by composer Paul Hunefeld. Learn more at appallingproductions.com. If you want to support Arthouse Garage, become a patron over at patreon.com/arthousegarage or find a link in the show notes. You can also buy an Arthouse Garage t-shirt at arthousegarage.com/shop. If you want to support us without spending any money, leave a rating or review in your podcast app, and that is hugely helpful. Stay in the loop about Arthouse Garage and the films we're covering by subscribing to our email newsletter at arthousegarage.com/subscribe, or you can email me directly, andrew@arthousegarage.com. And of course, follow on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd. Just search at Arthouse Garage in all those places, or find links
in the show notes. And that will do it for this episode. Thank you again so much for listening. And until next time, keep it snob free.